Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone.
Well, I want to give a mad shout out to Nekomi Taylor, who's doing her thing and, you know, holding it down for all the things she's got going on, you know what I'm saying? Still got a lot of love for her and everything like that, you know. So, I want to introduce, y'all are probably going to like her because, you know, she's, like, been a good friend of mine for a good long time now. So, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi, everyone. This is Emmeline. It's so nice to be able to do this with Mario tonight. I hope you guys are going to enjoy the show. I'm sort of long-winded, and anyone who's interacted with me online knows this. And Mario can be, too, when he's passionate about a subject. So hopefully we are not too redundant or boring.
Hey, I don't think we're going to be. You know, normally I have something pretty, you know, wicked to say and everything, you know, to kind of keep things going. Everything. I might even bring out an anecdote that has nothing to do with what we're talking about because I can
cool
do that, you know. You know,
okay. So
yeah.
What's our topic of discussion tonight? The conceptual analysis of hell and Satan, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We're talking about hell, Satan, and the whole nine. Is that my boy Will right there?
Is Will on the line?
Hello.
Hi.
Who is, hey, this is Will, isn't
it? No.
Oh, my bad, man. I'm sorry. I don't know his number yet. Right, I'm going to put you back on hold,
okay,
man.
Yeah, I'm just listening.
Yeah. All right. So we're just waiting for all the co-hosts to jump on in here and get it going with us. But, yeah, we're discussing, you know, something that might be a bit deep, you know. Hell, Satan, the concepts, the ideas, the mythologies, the mythos, you know what I'm saying? The defining it, you know, stuff like that, you know? It's been an interesting topic. I've seen several documentaries on it, and, you know, I've always considered it to be a very deep subject, you know, particularly when it relates to human beings and how we treat each other, you know what I'm saying?
Definitely.
You know, I sometimes I think the definition can be loosely interpreted, you know what I'm saying? What do you think, of the idea of hell?
Hell is a very, simple and complex idea, in my opinion. Simple because it operates on a very simple reward and punishment system. But it's very complicated because religious denominations are very, very, you know, in great disagreement about what exactly constitutes deserving of that sort of punishment of, you know, that eternal damnation. Eternity is a very long time, and they can't agree on what exactly it is that this person could have done wrong, how they could have quote-unquote sinned, that they would be deserving of going to such a place. I mean, then if you throw in the Catholic concept of purgatory, then you're entering into a whole new territory where you have this place where, you know, your sins are expiated, and that determines whether or not you're going to go to heaven or hell. I think hell, really, more than anything else, and that's something I can agree on across the board for all religions, is it is a very effective control mechanism. I honestly believe that theists are more afraid of going to hell than they are wanting to go to heaven. What I mean by that is that I feel that their actions are not done in order to earn the reward of heaven, but to avoid the punishment of hell. Because no matter what religious denomination or what religion a person subscribes to, hell is described vividly. It may be described in different ways. There may be different things awaiting you in hell, but it's described vividly and graphically and horrifically. But heaven is, it's really, only thing anyone can agree on is that it's paradise. But every person's definition of paradise varies. And scripture does not give a concrete definition of what that paradise will be. No uniform consensus on what that paradise is. So I definitely think that people want to avoid pain more than they crave pleasure.
I feel you. You know, it's almost like the only reason you're doing good is because you're afraid of the consequences of doing bad.
Mm-hmm.
The way, you know, hell has always been for me, especially coming up, you know, my grandma always told me, you know, that, you know, I think she said something about we don't go to hell or heaven until the day of judgment and stuff like that, you know, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being quite afraid of it because I'm looking at these books and everything, especially when it gets down to Revelations and it's talking about all these demons and stuff. And, you know, I mean, you know, at the time I was terrified of the idea. And I'm thinking, damn, I don't want that to happen. And I'm really thinking these demon-type creatures are going to come out of nowhere one day, rather from the ocean and start rampaging and stuff like that. It wasn't until I got older that I began to think, what kind of drugs do you have to be on to come up with the demons described in Revelation? I mean, I'm talking about seven heads and stuff like that. I mean, that takes somebody with a serious imagination to just dream that up, and, you know, and people adhere to it.
Well, actually,
you know,
this is a very interesting point about imagination.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a writer. And
no kidding,
now,
I am too.
And, yeah, now that, you know, I was a theist for many, many years. I was Roman Catholic. But looking, when you're on the outside looking in, you can see so much more clearly. It's kind of like being in your room. When you're in your room, you can only see that room of the house. You can't see the entire house until you step outside of it. And when I stepped out of religion, you know, it kind of dawned on me, why didn't I stop to think until, you know, I became an atheist, that as vivid as my imagination is, and as easily as I can create fiction just for my own pleasure, that, you know, 2,000 years ago there didn't exist people that, you know, could have created fiction for personal and financial and political and social gain. You know, the idea that people just now, you know, developed the ability to lie is completely ludicrous. And you bring up another really interesting point. When you were talking about, the final judgment, I've always asked people, is it really love if you're terrified of you know, the consequence of not, quote-unquote, loving this being?
Right. Right. I find myself always at the crossroads of trying to do my best to do the good things I'm told I should do, but also there's a human element in the fact that what I love doing is the things that God tells me that I cannot do. And mm-hmm. I remember that, or what couldn't I do? And I remember that from being younger and whatnot. And it's, you know, I began to ask myself, why am I given these desires if I'm not supposed to act upon them? Why do I have these impulses if I'm never supposed to do anything with them? You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? I mean, what is the point? Like, the body activates its sexual impulses, you know, and it's the physiology of sex and the hormones of sex at early ages. For girls, it can be as early as 8, 9, 10, you know, for boys, it's a little bit later. When we hit puberty, you know what I'm saying, our bodies have activated at an age before we can even comprehend the function that the body performs, you know, we're already able to perform these acts and everything like that, you know. Now, I can understand from a scientific standpoint, you back us back a couple hundred thousand, maybe a million years, it makes sense. Go ahead and get started with reproducing as soon as you can, because your life expectancy is probably 30 at this mm-hmm. point in time. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Now that we're smarter and we don't need all that, now we're in a position where we know that being with children is wrong and stuff like mm-hmm. that. But the body isn't thinking that. The body is thinking, activate, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. I'm activating these mechanisms and this physiology to do what it should be doing anyway. So we were given all these things. If you're looking at a biblical standpoint, we already have these things going on here, and we want these things. If I lost my virginity at 14. You know, and you're not supposed to masturbate. You're not supposed to have sex before marriage. You're not supposed to do this. You're not supposed to do that. But I want to. It feels good. My body wants to. It feels good.
The thing about the Bible, and I truly and completely, you know, think that hell is a fabrication that is done for control. But there are other subtle forms of control in the Bible. And I know a lot of theists, especially fundamentalist Christians, kind of throw the idea of evolution out of the window. But the Bible, the writers of the Bible play on, even though they lack, you know, geographic and paleontologic and, you know, other types of scientific knowledge, they had a very profound understanding of social evolution. You know, people like groups. People like labels. You can capitalize on a group or mob mentality. And, you know, just, you know, the concept of hell in itself plays on the human survival instinct. The human beings, you know, every species on the planet has an innate instinctive need to drive to do whatever it can to preserve its own life and the life of its offspring. This is natural. It's completely natural. It's survival of the fittest. But in a biblical standpoint, it tells you that you're not just going to die, because every living creature knows death is not the worst thing that could happen to you. Death is a permanent state. Once you die, you don't feel anything. Now, being fully aware of, you know, millennia, eternity of agony, that is the worst thing that could happen to someone. And religion plays on that. There is no selling the gift of heaven without also pushing the punishment of hell. Heaven wouldn't seem so appealing if hell wasn't so unappealing. And yes, religion is very inconvenient. It tells you not to fornicate, not to masturbate, not to eat pork and shellfish. But these things are minor inconveniences in the grand scheme of eternal suffering. And if you buy the eternal suffering load, then these are very, very, very trivial sacrifices to make to avoid such a thing.
Right. You see, first of all, let's now we're understanding what evil what these things are. You know, we're talking about these different concepts. Now, the Bible, I mean, depending on who you ask, you know, God will send you to hell or you'll go to hell one way or the other. And there are several different interpretations for what hell is, you know. And I know we mostly adhere to the Christianity type of idea of hell, but different cultures have different ideas.
Christians don't even agree.
There
are Christians who say that heaven is paradise, absolute happiness, and hell is absolute torture and pain for and agony for all eternity. Then some take the more philosophical, route of saying that heaven is constantly being flooded with God's grace, and hell is the complete absence of God. You know, monotheists especially believe that God is omnipresent. He is present in our lives, all we have to do is open ourselves to him. And hell is a place where you will be completely removed from the grace of God, and that will be agony for you. Either concept puts you in a situation where you're either going through physical or emotional agony, something that humans are not equipped to deal with long term, let alone eternity.
Exactly. And, you know, the definitions for hell that I got, you know, several of them, most of the ones that I point to are the ones that, you know, I got concerning mostly Christianity, but seem to be very generic. Now, Webster's defined hell as another world in which the dead continue to exist, and the nether world of the devil and the demons in which the damned suffer everlasting torment. Wikipedia says, you know, saying refers to more of the philosophical folklore, and then goes into the different ideas and religious traditions of the place, saying that hell is a place of suffering and punishment in an afterlife, often after resurrection. Now, according to the etymology, the word, the English word hell is derived from the old word, old English hell, H-E-L, comma, H-E-L-L-E.
The goddess hell.
Which, you know, according to, you know what I'm saying, the history of the word didn't first appear until 725 A.D. Now, you can probably go back and forth on that and correct me if you want
to. Well, hell has evolved a lot. I mean, you have hell, the original spelling H-E-L, as you said, that's based on the Nordic god hell. The place used to be called Hades, after the Greek god, and that's where he lived. After, ironically enough, his brother Zeus, who, you know, is the figure of the omnipotent god, and his other brother Poseidon tricked him into wasting away for all of eternity.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I find it really odd. The idea of hell is an interesting thing to me, because it's almost kind of hilarious, if you ask me, because think about this. You have a guy who has created, you know, these other beings. Let's assume that, you know, you just created all these other beings. You're a god, you created other beings. These beings are angels. One of them gets pissed off at you. You know what I'm saying? Y'all get into an argument for whatever reason. It might be he ate the last cookie. I don't know. But for whatever reason, you get pissed off and toss him out, all right? All right, he takes a gang of angels with him who apparently think you're an asshole. All right, so so we got that going on. All right, this group of angels goes down to the place that you just created for the beings that you care about, supposedly. Well, we can talk about that later. And they not only do they set up shop, but devise their own lair on this place. And whenever one of your people who you get upset with enough in their lifetime dies, for whatever reason, they are either sent or allowed to go to the lair of your chief enemy and are to be tortured for an eternity. You know, and the idea of that is just mind-boggling, that not only can someone disagree with God, but he can also take a chunk of his army with him and then create his own domicile upon the place that you just created. Now, I don't know what the curve is. I don't know what the leeway is or something like that. But it seems to me that it would be kind of hard to go into enemy territory and set up your own area where you can start messing with their people all willy-nilly. Now, my grandmother told me, and I remember this, and she's a Jehovah's Witness. So a long time since I heard this, so correct me if I'm wrong, but that Satan will be eventually locked away for 1,000 years and then released again, unless he changes his mind or something like that. I can't recall.
As far as I know, there's no one in the Bible that says that, so it could be a belief specific to Jehovah's Witnesses. I'm uncertain, but I wanted to talk a few of the things that you said. Now in the Bible, it says that Satan left. He wanted to. It's unclear, really, whether he was angry with God because God favored people more, he favored humankind more, or because he wanted to overthrow God. There's great debate about that among various Christian sects, but the bottom line is he left and tons of angels went with him. Now, my thoughts on that are, regardless of the reasons, if the God that's spoken of in monotheism is a true God, can you blame Lucifer for leaving? Then there's the second idea of being sent to hell. Now, most Christians agree God doesn't send you to hell. Your sins send you there. And I guess that makes sense. I guess it's similar, I guess, to the analogy that the judge doesn't send you to prison. Your crime sent you to prison. Now, about hell, I told you that Catholics have a different, another mythological supernatural realm called purgatory.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a place where your sins are expiated and they are weighed and measured and, you know, you are judged about, you know, whether or not you're righteous enough for heaven or deserving of hell. And even as a Catholic, I used to always, you know, think about the way purgatory was explained and think, we're living in purgatory right now. Where else do you suffer? Where else are your actions judged? I mean, even if a person never commits a crime and never faces a court of law, your actions are constantly judged by the people around you. You face consequences of anything that you do, good or bad, right now.
Right.
And whether that's only for you or whether that's on a public scale, consequences are consequences and judgment is judgment. And human beings are a very judgmental species, and that's another place where religion comes in. People like to feel safe, they like to feel secure, they like to be in a group of like-minded people, and religion plays on that herd mentality. And I think the whole concept of hell is, like I said in the beginning, there can be no love in a relationship where there's basically a gun pointed to your head.
Right.
I believe that anyone who is a theist who truly believes that they actually love God is suffering from a case of mentally induced Stockholm syndrome.
Right. I totally agree with you. Because to me, you know what I'm saying, the idea, if free will is truly the concept that they say it is, meaning I have options. I have 2, 3, 4 options. If I choose either of those options, there's not really a consequence unless it's just a stupid option. You know what I'm saying? If I have a choice between red, blue, and green, and I choose red, there's no consequence to me. I'm not punished for not choosing blue or green.
Mm-hmm.
The Bible tells me, though, that although I have been, or people tell me, that although I have been given the idea of free will, and I've been given the choice, given the ability to make choices for my own life, that the consequences of those choices may be me going to hell. And to me, that is, like you said, the gun to your head. If free will is truly free will, then there are no consequences for me not siding with you.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when you consider the fact that Christianity didn't show up to 1,500, 2,000 years after other religions had already shown up. And I may be wrong on the timeline, but it still showed up way later in the game. There are religions that exist before Christianity.
Basically, I'm going to let these people do whatever they want and go about their business, and then when I get fed up with it all, I'm going to impregnate my child with myself to sacrifice myself to myself so I can forgive you all for a sin that you created 2,000 years ago with the first people, that when the world is so much older than that. You know, it's kind of like, huh? But back to the idea of free will. Now, people can think what they want about free will. People think there is such a thing as free will. Some people think there are not. For the sake of our argument with religion, let's just say there is free will, because monotheists love to play that up, saying, well, you have a choice, you have a choice, you have a choice. So let's imagine this choice, shall we? In monotheism, God is omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent. He is all-powerful, he is all-knowing, and he is everywhere all at once all the time. You only need, you know, the one trait of God, the omniscience, to completely negate free will. If you know everything that's going to happen, past, present, or future, there really isn't any free will, and I'm going to elaborate on that. As human beings, we have decisions to make in our lives, and we weigh the options and the pros and cons of the choices that we might make. However, we merely think we are making these decisions. For us, there are many forks in the road. But for God, it's a straight line from even before your conception to the day you die. There are not many options and many forks in the road. There is one road, one option. So the idea that we have free will is completely negated. And furthermore, you can even say that God creates people for hell, and then he wants to punish me for it, and he wants to punish you for it, and it's our fault for doing exactly what he planned for us to do.
Right.
Because
right.
being omnipotent, he could never, ever create beings that would do contrary to what he wanted. And being omniscient,
right.
he would always know what we were going to do.
Right. You know, saying the problem is that it makes sense. So, you know, the problem with a storytelling that is 2,000 years old is that the rules can change no matter. It depends on who's telling it. If you use the analogy of the phone game, in which you and I start with 20 other people, I whisper something to you, you whisper something to the person beside you. By the time we get to person number 20, it's a completely different story.
But here's
the
thing about the phone game and why I don't like that analogy. I think you're trying to make an analogy of all the different denominations of different religions. Mm-hmm. But this is why I don't like the phone game analogy. Because at the end of the day, if you're the 20th person that was called on a conversation that started between me and another friend, you can always call me and that first person I was speaking to and verify events. Between the two of us, you can flesh out what the truth is. You can't do that with the Bible. I mean, religious people like to say, don't put your faith in man, put your faith in the Bible, the Torah, the Quran, fill in the blank bullshit. But they are the ones taking it on faith that the people who wrote these books weren't complete liars and con men, that they were, in fact, inspired by God, a God that is completely intangible and won't come down and just tell us, hey, that those people are right, and people that we certainly can't dig up from the grave now. So how do we end this phone game? How do we squash the rumor? You can't.
No, you can't, especially when there's time between each call. And there's, you know, saying everyone takes a different interpretation of the call and forms a completely different narrative from there on in. You got different stories going around. And a lot of times, you know, a lot of things I've read suggest that a lot of the stories in the Bible were taken from other stories anyway. And like,
so you have the story of Noah, which is based on the Epic of Gilgamesh, and that's a huge one.
Which is, I was just going to talk about that. Yeah, you know. You can go ahead.
Well, you know that story. Old guy thinks that the world is flooding. He puts a bunch of animals on the boat. That story's been recycled to death. And, you know, I've actually, you know, leaving beside the fact that if there were a worldwide flood, all marine life would be dead because the pH balance of both the salt and the freshwater would be so unstable and disturbed that both the freshwater and the saltwater animals would have already completely died off. Leaving that fact behind, I just ask people simply, in a world where your only means of travel are, you know, four-legged animals and your own 2 feet, isn't it possible that since you can't visit, you know, other countries easily, you certainly can't visit other continents, that if a huge storm like, let's say, a monsoon, which can last upwards of 2 months, you know, came down where you were living, you would think that the entire world were flooding. There's no Facebook, there's no email, there's no media to, you know, to show you other places that are not underwater. If a situation like Katrina had happened, you know, in pre-media times, pre-transportation times, what would people think? The whole world is drowning. It's not that much of a stretch, but apparently it is an idea that you can fit two of every unclean animal and seven of every clean animal, because that's what the story actually says, not two of each. Two of the unclean and seven of the clean animals on a boat smaller than the Titanic, that makes sense.
Right, right. And we finally got our other co-host on the line. I'm saying my buddy Will, yo, let him know what's up with you.
How you doing? Yeah, I was sitting at the computer writing, and I fell asleep right there sitting at the desk. Terrible.
Hi.
How you doing there?
So, what do you have to say about hell, man?
Yeah, I'm just catching up. It wasn't about the devil or the Satan character in the Bible, or.
We were discussing hell, and we was going to segue into Satan in a little bit there. You know what I'm saying? Or we can go ahead and lead on right on into it. It's all good.
We should
actually
probably answer these questions before our time runs out.
Well, we kind of went right on over. Hell, I think we really discussed that pretty good and everything. You know, Satan, you know, something I just read and everything, you know, feel free to, you know, to throw lumps on me in there, Will, because, you know, it's all good. You always have something good to say anyway, man, so I always look forward to that. All right. You know, something I was reading was about Sheol and how the Hebrew scriptures, in the Hebrew scriptures, hell simply means a place of the dead. And, I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce some of these old words and everything like that because, you know, hey, why? You know, you know what I'm talking about. But
yeah.
The Greek words and the Hebrew words all have some type of different meaning. The souls of the righteous go direct. Where was I at? All right. Sheol and Hades is a temporary place where the souls of unbelievers are kept as they await the final resurrection and judgment. At the great white throne judgment. The souls of the righteous go directly into the presence of God, heaven, paradise, Abraham's bosom at death. You can look this up in Luke 23:43, 2 Corinthians 5:8, and Philippians 1:23. Lake of Fire, same thing. Philip, you know. The lake of fire mentioned only in Revelation 19:20 and 20:10, 14:15 is the final hell, a place of eternal punishment for all unrepentant rebels, both angelic and human. Matthew 25:41. It is described as a place of burning sulfur, and those in it experience eternal, unspeakable agony of an unrelenting nature. Luke 16:24, Mark 9:45-46. Those who have rejected Christ and are in the temporary abode of the dead in Hades/Sheol have the lake of fire as their final destination, which means I'm a shoo-in since I pretty much have rejected Christ, since I don't even believe the guy lived. So.
Well, like I said, different religions and based different language translations of those original texts describe hell differently, but they all describe hell quite vividly. Heaven, what is that like? I mean, I saw a video once by an atheist YouTuber named Dusty Smith, and, you know, he made this satire about, you know, what if every Thursday in heaven is Angel Day Thursday, and it's where you get raped by an angel? You don't know. You don't know anything about
right.
the place. I mean, in
right.
Catholicism, they would say that suffering brings you closer to God, and I believe this is a trait of Islam as well, and that those who suffer the greatest here on earth will have a greater reward in heaven. And my first thought was, you know, thinking about, like, houses in heaven. Like, if you had, like, a decent life here, do you get, like, a one-story house? And, like, the guy, you know, who died of starvation in Ethiopia, does he get, like, you know, a compound, like, bigger than Jay-Z's mansion? Is there, like, a class system or socioeconomic system in heaven? How does that even work? you know, they can't even agree on that. And I'm pretty sure that, you know, if our wits are about us, people are going to be a little bit pissed off when, you know, we have, like, priority people or special people in heaven just because they suffered a lot on earth. Then you have the other people that say, you know, sin is a byproduct of free will and heaven is a place without sin, which logically implies that heaven is also a place without free will. How are you going to enjoy heaven as a mindless robot?
There you go.
Man, you are you guys are really far along with that. Like, I guess as a natural atheist for life, I always just looked at it as just so silly and unrealistic. And I know the deepest part I know about it was the just singing your praises to the Lord for eternity, just one long song. Like, that's the most that I knew about it, chilling out on a cloud somewhere.
You know,
my grandma told me about the paradise
earth.
People who've been
atheists don't like read so deep into it. I think it's different when you were indoctrinated, or at least your parents tried to indoctrinate you. Like, I guess you see behind the veil.
You see a lot further than I do, and you like they say that like reading the Bible's the best way to make an atheist.
Yep.
And, like, even though I have one, I haven't read it. I'm still just carrying it around for a prop.
It's really boring. I don't blame you. It was really hard for me to read all of it because it contradicted itself a lot, and that wasn't so bad. But there were a lot of parts that were just so slow, like, especially, you know, Proverbs and Psalms. Like, that was really hard to read because it was just, like, the worst advice ever and a lot of complaining, especially the Psalms David wrote. So boring.
Yeah. Now let me ask you a question. Now we talk a lot of stuff about, you know, about hell, and you know the governor, the chief, the head dog, the runner, the warden, the prince of darkness of Satan of hell is supposed to be Satan. You know,
the prince of darkness
talk,
wants the angel of light. How ironic is that?
Yeah, you consider that. You know, and it's like, why is he only the prince of darkness if he's the chief dude of darkness? I don't know. It's like being the vice president when the president's already dead. But anyway, if you all right, now we put a lot of stuff on Satan. We say all this stuff about Satan. I know that y'all have learned about, you know what I'm saying, Satan and his influences. Everybody has something to say about what Satan does. I see it on Facebook. You know, people say, get thee behind me, Satan, this, that, and the other. You know what I'm saying? The enemy will not steal my joy. But in Isaiah 45:7, the scripture reads, and I'm reading from the New International Version, I form the light and create the darkness. I bring prosperity and create disaster. I, the Lord, do all these things. So that's telling me, if I'm reading that book, and I just read that scripture, that is telling me God himself created not only goodness but evil. But think about this. If there is no evil at the time that there is God, if God is all good and there is no evil, he creates a being who becomes evil. Didn't he just create that? Isn't that of him? Didn't that come from him? Didn't that evil exist in him before anything? Because if
okay,
he
well,
created
I agree with
everything,
you.
then this is also a part of him. Then when you think about this book, this whole ideology, this religion folds in on itself, and what it is you're fighting two different elements of the same being.
Yeah, of the same crazy guy that invented the God. Like how they say, like how you are God. Like when you pray, you're talking to yourself, and what you want to do is what God wants you to do. And it sounds like, yeah, like that same guy who wrote that, since he is God, he created that darkness and that light. He made Beverly Hills and Compton. And
God is his ego and the devil is his alter ego.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I noticed when you said he's the prince of that darkness, but not the king. You know, he's not the president, but he's still the vice. So it's like he still works for God. He's just bad cop, good cop in this silly movie that somebody made 2,000 years ago.
I'm really glad that you brought up the whole bad cop, good cop thing, because I want to discuss something with you guys, and it's the definition of good and the definition of evil. Like, humans have a very concrete definition of what good and evil is. We have a dictionary definition, and of course, different people see different acts as being either good or evil, but everyone has a concrete definition in their mind of what good or evil is. And it seems to me that theists, especially monotheists, throw those definitions out of the window when they're reading their scripture. Because, okay, the devil's evil, right? But how? Because God says he is. What did he do that was evil in comparison to all the evil that God did? But God gets a pass, like everything that he does is automatically considered good just because he says he's good and he says that he's God and he says that he's the creator. But what exactly did Satan do that was so evil?
He disagreed with him. He tested the boss's ego, didn't he?
You guys?
Yeah.
Hold on. I didn't hear what anybody said.
Didn't he just test the boss's ego? Like saying, I'm going to take over this corporation. And then God said, nah, you can't be with Walmart anymore up here in heaven. You're going down the Family Dollar down there in hell, and you're going to run that. It's the prince. Like, wasn't that how he did that?
Look, I love Family Dollar, first of all. I think that's a great store. And no one can ever convince me that Family Dollar is not awesome and that it's not a much more ethical corporation than Walmart. And we all know what Walmart does, so I thought that was a pretty good analogy. But, I mean, the fact of the matter is, if a human being did the things that God has done, he would be labeled a tyrant. He'd be labeled a monster. If he were alive, he would be subject to human rights, all kinds of human rights violations. He'd be, you know, on trial for these things. I mean, Hitler did a lot less than what the God character did in the Bible, and everyone's revering him for creating a flood that drowned every person except a family of eight.
Now, when we go into stuff like that, a lot of people will say that this is not meant to be taken literally. This is supposed to be mythology. It's supposed
that
to be some type of anecdote to get exactly. My thing is this: is if you put it in this book, if it's in an instruction manual, if I am instructing you on how to live your life or how to do something, and I include anecdotes in that book, you know what I'm saying? Those are anecdotes for me to teach you something. All right. So if I'm using personal accounts, or I'm using accounts that I'm using specific scenarios and stuff like that, I, as a reader, I'm going to assume that this really happened. Especially if I'm truly believing in what you said.
Well,
so I can't give you that pass because the way that's why I can't give it a pass, because if you're saying if you haven't differentiated the anecdote from the actual message that you're trying to say, then it's either all anecdote or all literal. It can't be one or the other, because you gotta have people who won't say this is anecdote and this is literal, and what you just done then is created a whole nother denomination. And
that's why I brought up the gay flood story, because like you said, there are a lot of things that certain religious sects will say are analogous or metaphorical. But I've never run into a Christian. There are 40,000 denominations, so I haven't met someone from all of them. So I could be wrong. But I've personally never met a Christian who thought that the Great Flood story was an analogy or a metaphor. Some of them think that the whole, you know, two of every animal on the boat thing, you know, that might be a stretch. But every Christian I've ever met believes, yes, that there was a global flood that covered the world, and that
right.
People had to be punished. The lame, the deaf, the blind, the babies, the unborn. I mean, talk about mass abortion, right?
Right.
And no, God killed them all. And
right.
That he had to do it.
Right.
Either he
so
had to
then,
do it because we were so bad, which means that he's still a good person, or I even got the answer, well, he's God. He can do whatever the hell he wants.
Right.
Basically,
yeah.
You know, I hear the same thing. It's like the relationship between a prostitute and her pimp, really. Nothing he does is bad, right? He's a pimp. He's a man. He can do whatever he wants. It's my job, just obey.
Right.
Yeah,
right,
and it sounds like a lot of modern-day people wouldn't want to admit publicly out loud what you said, like how you said that world flood, the people had to be punished. And it's only like those Westboro Baptist people that you hear that'll say, oh, 9/11, yeah, that was God's hand. People had to be punished. All the gay marriage and abortion. Now, a lot of people, they don't want to say that out loud, though, because, and you know, that argument you might hear if you listen to, like, debates or watch debate videos where they say, oh, the Bible never changes. And it's like, really, I think it does change because you keep changing the way you interpret it for each generation, you know, to
make it fit. I totally agree with that. And, you know, the thing with Fred Phelps is part of my language. He's a complete asshole, but at least he keeps it real. If this man had been born in biblical times, His word and his work would be revered as inspired, and he would be a prophet. How were the prophets Elijah and how were Moses and Muhammad any better than Fred Phelps? They're the ones who wrote these quote unquote laws. How are they better than he is? At least he can practice what he preaches. At least he's not afraid of going out there with signs about, you know, the unsavory Bible verses that other believers want to cling to. And I love how, you know, moderate, cherry-picking Christians want to distance themselves from fundamentalists like him. I'm like, why should you have to do that? The same Bible that you cling to for its comforting verses is the same Bible where he finds his hateful rhetoric. If your fundamentalists are screwed up, there's something wrong with your fundamentals.
Right. Now, as regards, you know what I'm saying, to the person who is all this, who's supposed to be controlling all this, we said he's referred to as the Prince of Darkness. That means that the king is who? Because that guy is the one who created him. That means he would have to be the king. You understand?
Yeah,
so,
the king of all kings and the lord of all lords.
Well, the Bible
says
the Lord rules everything. The Lord your God controls everything. Not a single hair on your head can be touched without the Lord already knowing about it. The Lord knew you when you were in your mom's belly, right? The Lord knows everything. He controls everything. He's made that perfectly clear. Even when Satan told Jesus, if you worship me, I'll give you the world. And he said, and, you know, Jesus said, my Father controls everything. Everything is in my Father's hand, a.k.a. myself.
Right, well,
but you know that.
Exactly. And I'm going to read something right quick, and then I think we have a call from 989. I see you. Just raise your hand right there, so just give me a second. Now, Satan has, you know, one thing I read, watched a documentary that showed how the different ideas of Satan changed throughout the years and stuff like that. And, you know, it's like, well, you know, people start forgetting about who they should be fearing, so let's revamp him. It's almost like a movie that was made 35 years ago, let's remake it for the modern times because, you know, it still has to be relevant. But Satan, you know, English synonym for Satan is devil, which descends from Middle Eastern, devel, D-E-V-E-L, from Old English, I'm not even going to try to pronounce that, that in turn represents an early Germanic borrowing of Latin, diabolus, also the source of diabolical. Beelzebub, meaning Lord of Flies, is a contemptuous name given in the Hebrew Bible and New Testament to a Philistine god whose original name has been reconstructed to as most probably Baal Zebul, meaning the prince. Satan is traditionally identified as the serpent who convinced Eve to eat the forbidden fruit, which I disagree with because I don't really consider it. The description never specifically identified the serpent as Satan. So to me, probably could get a man a bit of foot of the doubt, you know. I mean, if
I really
the
like
snake
to talk
skin
about
does not fit, you must quit. So.
I'd really like to talk about the serpent thing because we're never really clear on whether it is truly a talking servant that was in cahoots with Lucifer or if it was Lucifer dressed as a snake. Now,
yeah, I mean,
in any respect, the devil is attributed as, you know, being the one who made a sin. But I still, at the end of the day, the story says it was a serpent, and the serpent was punished. Why is the serpent being punished? Because he was a victim of identity theft.
Right, and punished to crawl around on his stomach, so it makes me wonder, how in the hell was he getting around before that? I mean, did he fly or something?
They had legs.
Anyway.
They had legs before that.
All right, 989, you're on the line, man. Holler.
Hi, guys. How you guys doing?
Hey.
Hi. Hey. Who's speaking?
It's Alphonse. I'm a black nominee, I guess.
What's up, man?
Not much. I'm hearing a lot. Like I said, I wish it was some fierce callers, because I guess I'm to that point where I don't debate the Bible no more. So, I'm hearing a lot of interesting stuff, especially about hell. A lot of people really don't realize that the initial intent for hell was just to entertain. Like, it was a story. It was meant to entertain. And writers of the New Testament took it and used it as a control tool and for fear. Like, evil being the unknown, like, from a metaphysical standpoint, even though I don't really accept metaphysical, but some, I guess, from a metaphysical, like, negative point, that's why you would call it the devil or evil. And then from a metaphysical standpoint, on the positive side, that's what you would call God. That's why people always say, well, all things that are good are God, and all things that are bad, you know, that are evil, come from the devil. So,
well, that makes sense, because people tend to fear what they don't understand and what they don't know.
Exactly. And that's why, you know, people don't question at all.
I'm not wanting to debate religion anymore. You know, I've kind of hung my hat up on that. The Bible is written in such a way, most holy books are written in such a way that you can take from what you want to take from it. And, you know, if you're constantly using that book to defend itself, what can I do? Absolutely nothing. That's like me, you know, being my own alibi in a murder trial.
Oh, well, not so much the Bible. Not so much religion. Like, I just won't debate the Bible because I don't see it as evidence. Like, religion, I'll debate that. But I'm just learning now that with the Christian sects, there's so many different kinds. You have some Christians that take the Bible literally, but you have some other Christians that take it symbolically. You have some that read it metaphorically, and they're not.
Well,
you know,
most of them read it semi-literally. And it's very hard to find a Christian that doesn't think that some part of the Bible is literal. Most of them will agree that the Ten Commandments are literal. That, you know, the story of Moses getting the slaves out of Egypt, that happened. The story of Jesus dying on the cross, that happened. If everything else that they debate, oh, that's an analogy, that's a metaphor, that's probably what's even inspired by God. The heathens put it there, the pagans put it there. But, you know, there are certain things that they can all agree on that, oh, yeah, that definitely, definitely happened. And then you kind of see their better sense of kicking in and saying, oh, no.
Not necessarily. A lot of, especially, you have a lot of philosophy majors, especially people that I've met that are theists, that do not take the book literally, but they just take it metaphorically, and they are still Christians. And I say, more power to them, as long as they're not believing that shit and applying it.
I agree with you that we need as few crazy, violent fundamentalists as possible. But, you know, cherry pickers is really annoying me because it's to the point where they are trying to proclaim a religion that they don't truly believe in. And, I mean, if you're just going to apply a beautiful philosophy, there are other beautiful philosophies you could apply. Most Eastern religions have better philosophies. And if you're going to live your life based on metaphors, you might as well just read a bunch of Shakespeare's plays and believe in that.
Well, I mean, that's you being kind of subjective on that. I mean, if what works for them may work for them. You know, I can't tell someone that, thinking from a metaphorical standpoint, that's bad for them.
I don't have a problem with people finding comfort in religion. I do have a problem with people who, like you say, take their religion as metaphor or allegory and then try to claim to other people that it's true.
Yeah, the problem is
if you want to keep that to yourself, because it makes you feel good, by all means, do that. Don't come to me as an adult and tell me that it's true, even though you have made rationalizations for every bit of it.
Yeah, I didn't say that, though. Like, I didn't say these people were trying to convert me or anything. These people just live their normal day-to-day lives, and they take the Bible symbolically. They're not converting people or anything. They feel a certain way about Christ's teachings and different things like that. And I have no problem.
You are so lucky. You are so lucky not to have been the converting type of Christian.
William has a comment, y'all.
Oh yeah, when they when, you know, it's like the, it seems like they're keeping in their daily lives, but when you got the politicians and that push the religion, you know, they try to legislate the religion, and these guys, they go to the voting booth, and with their right to vote, they can go ahead and push their religion right on into your life, like how the how the Chick-fil-A guys, you know, they ran up their money and they went out there to California and Prop Date away a whole bunch of people's rights because they could afford it and they felt like doing it with their religion. And people that, you know, you would think they were practicing their religion in their home and with their friends and family in their church, they took their right to vote and went and legislated their religion into the lives of millions of complete strangers that they'll never interact with, but their religion is now a part of that complete stranger's life. And exactly. That's why I'll speak out against it, but to actually stand there and debate a theist in line at the grocery store, I'm not going to be polite, and I'm probably going to just push them away and make them hate atheists. You know, as soon as they say it, I'm going to be like, well, just who convinced you, Jesus boy? That's what's going to impress me. Who showed you evidence?
I think the theist, and I'm not just saying Christians, but I'm saying across the board, the theist that does keep their religion to themselves is very, very rare. I think the person who doesn't allow their religious affiliation to affect the way they vote and the way that they treat others, either consciously or subconsciously, is almost impossible to find. It's very, very hard to be in that level of indoctrination, to believe something so fully and say, and keep it in a separate part of your mind. Your mind isn't, you know, a system of files where I'm just going to close this out for now. Everything you know and everything you've experienced has an impact on the way that you live your life.
Not necessarily. I mean, maybe I think we're probably speaking from experience, but I have to disagree with you on that. That's not necessarily true. I mean, from my background, yeah, because we were taught that it was real, and we were taught if we don't believe it, then we're going to hell. But like I said, I've actually encountered some Christians that you never would have thought they were Christians, that actually will still go to Buddhist temples and still participate in other things. But, I mean, do I agree with it? No. But if it's not harming humanity at all, I have no problem with it. Now, you have some fundamentalist atheists that would like to burn every church down and burn every Bible, and guess what? I totally disagree with that.
There's probably been more Christians that burn churches down than atheists, considering the white Christians burning down black churches.
The truth is, if we didn't have these religions, we would have something else either just as bad or worse. So I can understand where you're coming from, Alphonse. And I don't believe in book burning, period. And, you know, people have asked me, oh, are you going to indoctrinate your child atheism? I'm like, of course not. I'm not going to hide the fact, but if my child shows an interest in religion, I'm not going to get them a holy book. I'm going to get them every holy book I can get my hands on, and make sure that they make an informed decision. If they should choose to cling to a religion and choose one as the one for them, I will support that decision.
I agree.
Now, I tell you this though, you know, especially on Facebook, I have met many believers who, you know, I've really become really good friends with, because they're not the super fundy. They're not the one that's, you know, out there preaching, and they're not judging me from me being an atheist and stuff like that. I can really handle that. But, you know, even though I don't agree with the religion or stuff like that, I'm kind of of the mindset, if this is all they're doing and stuff like that, and essentially we agree on almost quite many things about religion, I ain't gonna worry about it. But, you know, if you are on here, and if I'm like, I posted something about CFA on my page, and people who hardly ever talk to me take that as their chance to come out and tell me how they feel about it and why homosexuality is wrong and everything. That's when I get upset, and that's when I let you know about yourself. And, you know, I'm sorry, but, you know, if you keep pushing at me, I don't care how friendly we are, if you disrespect me or my page or anybody who is a friend of mine, you know, on my page especially, I'm going to go hard and I'm going to return the favor real quick.
This has happened to me a couple of times, and I've posted things, you know, in that were directly critical of religion or had to do with something that very religious friends didn't like, you know, issues about homosexuality or other religions, things of that nature. these people, a lot of whom haven't spoken to me, you know, we're just Facebook friends, haven't talked in months or years, will come out of the woodwork to try to, you know, argue me down using XYZ Bible verse of choice. And I've even had friends that said, well, if you don't want this, you know, this kind of thing on your page, you shouldn't post it, basically trying to censor me on my own Facebook page.
And I understand that, but this is the thing, too, that we have to consider. And I'm not suggesting that everyone else does this, but when I first came an atheist or whatever, I was posting a lot of religious rhetoric, just, you know, anti-stuff, making fun of religion and picking fun. But at the same time, it was misrepresenting that religion. Like, if you're misrepresenting the religion or whatever, I have a problem with that. Like, if you're going to promote critical thinking or whatever, fine. But if you just misrepresent a religion or whatever, then of course they're going to get upset. Of course they're going to feel offended. And if that's your...
Can I ask you a question?
Go ahead.
What is the definition of misrepresenting a religion?
And I'm not saying you specifically, I'm just saying when someone says, you know, well, Jesus was a zombie, or, you know, different things like that, that's misrepresenting a religion. It's okay to criticize when you misrepresent, and that's why we get the different flack that we get.
I want to use the term misrepresent, because when you said misrepresent, the first place my mind went was posting negative Bible verses. I think more people should see those things. I think what you're thinking about is making a mockery, like mocking the religion. Am I right?
That's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I got you, and I agree with you. I agree with you on that point, because at that point, even the most placid believer is going to be defensive, and you're not going to get anywhere.
Of course. Like, my whole goal is to promote critical thinking, not just amongst theists, but amongst atheists too, because we have a lot of atheists that do not critically think. I only apply that when it comes to religion. So if you promote critical thinking and you be an example, you know, they're like, oh, hold on, like, this guy's not a Christian. I get that all the time. And it's mostly from people at school who wants to invite me to their church or something like that. And I'll say, well, okay, you're not a Christian? I'm like, no, I'm not religious. They ask me the correct questions.
Well, let me ask you all this, man. As far as the topics, you know, we were discussing, especially hell and Satan and whatnot, this is probably a redundant question, but do you think any of them are real? Now, I'm pretty sure it's going to be said no, but let me put this to you this way, you know what I'm saying? When I think of Satan, I'm supposed to identify Satan with evil. When I think about God, I'm supposed to identify God as good. So, you know, if human beings came from from God, who is both light and darkness, from what the scripture said, then we all embody both good and evil within each of us. Now, we can go back and forth about what each is. You know what I'm saying? What each is: God, good, evil, the whole nine, and stuff like that. I was recently reading about serial killers, you know what I'm saying, and stuff like that. And I'm looking at the idea of people killing, you know, for whatever reason they have, whether it's some type of impulse and stuff like that, and doing all these horrific things. But I'm also thinking about scriptures, and I can't remember the scripture right now, verbatim, but the scripture said, now go in and kill all the men and women and infant and children, and donkey and ass and stuff like that. Basically go in there and completely annihilate every breathing thing in there. You know what I'm saying? Now, is evil an action, and a thought, or is it based on why you're doing it? If you're killing men, women, and children because you believe it's a divine reason for doing it, really, you're going to believe that you're doing good. You're not going to believe you're doing evil. The people being massacred, though, are probably not going to think very highly of you for doing it. So, what do you think? What do y'all think of as good and evil?
I know a lot of theists believe in what they like to call thought crimes. Like, if you're just capable of even thinking it, whether or not you've actually thought it, that's evil. Thinking a crime, is, you know, it's a, I mean, it goes, even one of the Ten Commandments says, not Ten Commandments, the laws of Moses says that if you lust after a woman in your mind, if you've already committed adultery with her. I really think that evil, and this is not a popular mindset, is subjective. Like you said, those people who do those things and believe in, you know, all righteousness, that they have not just a right but an obligation to do those things, don't see themselves as evil. And if you consider the thought behind their actions, it's not with pure malicious intent. And of course, like you said, the people that are the victims of their crimes will see them as evil. So evil can be subjective. And when you're talking about monotheism, when you have a God who has committed, condoned, and ordered great evil in his name, then if that's your example of what good is, then can I honestly say that you're bad if you truly believe this?
I mean, I think that has to do with morality. And just from my point of view, morality evolves. Like, and it's not based on the individual. You know, I think whatever is progressive for humanity is good. Whatever is, you know, not progressive for humanity is bad. So that's a tough question. I'll have to take that case by case. Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna pick back up on that. What do you think, William?
I was wondering. What'd you say? It's subjective there, meaning it's like from thing to thing, from person to person. Like for somebody, they think it'd be good to go down to the soup kitchen and, you know, grab a ladle and, you know, pass out a couple of bowls of hot soup to some homeless people. While me, and this may seem a little silly, I might just give a homeless dude $15 and be like, well, there you go. You got to get a couple of cheeseburgers, some beer, and some cigarettes and some change for tomorrow morning. And it's subjective. And like with the kid raising, you know, I spend the most amount of hours with my niece, and I teach her straight up that religion is just pure silly beans, all of them, every single one, and we sit down and laugh at religious videos together. And so I'm probably not giving her much of a shot to be too open minded there. So maybe somebody else would see that as that's not a fair deal. I don't know if it would go all the way to evil, though.
It depends. The morality, let's say, evolves over time. Like, we talked about that before in class. Like, if our population was dying, like our species, the human species, human beings or whatever was dying, and men had to forcefully have sex with women, would that be wrong?
Mm.
Well, rape.
Yeah, I mean,
I
agree with you. I do believe that it is subjective. I mean, really, there is no person on the planet that does something that another person doesn't consider to be evil. The fact that I'm
correct.
An atheist, tons of people consider that to be evil. Vegans, a lot of vegans consider people who eat meat to be horrible people. Oh, why don't you think about that animal's feelings? What kind of sick person would eat the flesh of a living being? You know, there is no person on earth that cannot be judged as doing something at least bad or wrong in their lifestyle by another person. And I don't mean just like one action, like, oh, I cheated on a test, but something about the way that I live that a person couldn't, you know, point their finger on and say, that's evil, that's wrong.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah, it is person to person and situation to situation. Like, I think, like, off the top of my head, maybe I'm a little too hippie-ish and liberal. Like, I would value women not getting raped over dragging along this species that I don't really think is that special. Like, if the women don't want to breed with the men anymore and let the species die out, I'd say, fine, fair deal. While somebody else would say, nah, that's insane. We need to, you know, go Todd Akin on them.
And I don't even think it would even get to rape, because I'm pretty sure a lot of the women would be like, you know what, I'll take one for the team. You know, I'll sleep with that guy. Yeah, I think a lot of the women might actually say that. Yes, I'll take him for the team. I'll propagate the human race. They might even feel honored by it to be the new mothers of the new generation of humanity. And there are tons of women that have children just to, you know, because they want the experience of being a mother. Now, you tell this woman that she has an elevated status of motherhood because she's not on a planet with billions of mothers anymore. She's on a planet with, like, tens or just hundreds of mothers.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure there are some women that would not have to be raped in that situation.
So,
yeah, yeah, you're right. That was my first thought, but I was running with it. How you said if you had to rape them, like if it was that or nothing. Yeah, there is that middle ground where it's like there would be the people that would say, yeah, let's go ahead and keep this species going.
Yeah, I wouldn't take them to the team, just as we know, but I'm pretty sure somebody would. I'm pretty sure somebody would. And you know what? Even in that context, the men and women who didn't want to be the new breeders for the new human race would probably be seen as evil by those who did, and vice versa.
Yeah.
And they'd create the new religion out
of
it.
How could you
be
so selfish? You don't care about humanity.
It's like, no, it's just like how you were talking about how those vegans think I'm evil, and it's like, well, go out to the jungle and protest a lion when he's going after a gazelle. Like, animals are going to eat animals, Chief. We're mammals.
Yeah,
you know,
vegetables are a living species, too. Like, they have cells. So.
Yeah, right? And I love hunting down
the
broccoli.
There are tons of studies that have shown that plants do react to a lot of stimuli that animals do, light, music, you know, and even, you know, the benefits of talking to a plant that will make it thrive is a plant that's completely alone and is devoid of outside contact. So, I mean, I know a lot of vegans like to use that rationale of, well, you know, animals have feelings and stuff like that, but we're learning more and more that a lot of plants do as well.
Well, you know, I saw Night of the Triffids, so, you know, I'm not really going to get too close to any plants that, you know, respond to my voice and everything.
Do you guys think we should probably, like, get
human.
Around to answering these questions that we were supposed to answer?
Well, I think we have. We had a good discussion about hell and discussed Satan and good and evil and stuff like that.
Is God a masochist?
I think some bitch is. You know what I'm saying? And I normally, some people will say that I sound a little disrespectful when it comes to speaking about God, but I think that I have that right because I don't believe in it. And if I was discussing Zeus or some other deity, it wouldn't be a problem. So, I kind of think that he is, man. I mean, you know, if not a masochist, you know what I'm saying, he has to have some type of enjoyment of pain and suffering to have it hardwired into the human experience. I mean, from the outset, you know, we were screwed, especially from a misogynistic point of view, you know. If you read the Bible, women get a raw deal in the Bible, man. I mean, for eating the apple, Eve is cursed to, you know, harsh childbirth and stuff like that, which trickled down to all women, if you're going to go by the Bible. You know what I'm saying? By contrast, Jonah said, I'm not going. And so he gets locked in the belly of a whale for 3 days and then is released when he said, all right, I'll go.
You know what? I'm gonna play devil's advocate here. Sometimes when I hear about that, you know, women get a raw deal in the Bible, yes, I'm segueing again. I often read the Bible, and I think men get a raw deal in the Bible as well. It's more subtle, but I think it's just as significant because in the Bible you have man being ruled over by God. And then, of course, his uncontrollable lust for females. Like, he can't control himself. And there's so many rules telling a woman, you know, don't arouse a man who's not your husband because he just can't control himself. Like he's an animal. He has no self-control whatsoever. You have complete control over him if you flash your boobies or you bat your eyes the right way. And then, of course, he's got to work to the day he dies to take care of his family because women have children, so it's your job to do every single thing else.
So what do you think? Do you
hold on? What?
So what
it's like
think?
My
you
life now. Like I don't see that as a raw deal. Like most of the, men were kings in the Bible. Like I don't agree with that whole king idea, but you know.
Well, there were kings in the Bible, of course, but we're not talking about kings. We're not talking about, you know, everyday men. Like Solomon, for example, he was a king.
Sure.
David was the king, but David really got a raw deal from God. he messed around and killed some dude so he could marry his wife because, again, he can't control himself. He saw this woman bathing and he had to have her because, you know, men have no self-control, according to the Bible. And he suffered for it. Then his son Solomon married some woman that, even though he was king, God could tell him who he could and couldn't marry. And he married this woman, and she turned him into a heathen, and God punished him for that. It's like, you know, no matter how much power the men think they have, God can step in at any moment. And, you know, men get elevated status in monotheism, but they get almost all the worst punishments as well.
Yeah, that's probably why I don't go into it that deep. I mean, because you just asked, I know you guys just asked the question that God was a masochist. I think that was the question. I will probably say the author who created God was sick.
Oh, no, that was going to be my answer. That was my answer I had going there.
Yeah. Why am I commenting on something I don't think is real?
I actually think that a lot of theists are masochists and that God is a sadist. And I think there are some that actually enjoy this very controlling relationship, this manipulation by this unseen entity, because a lot of them believe that it's the only way they can live their lives right. There are a lot of people that cling to religion because they need that sense of control. They need that little set of rules. And, you know, I tell you all the time, if you really feel that way, if you think that your religion is the only thing keeping you from going out there and killing somebody or raping somebody, then by all means, keep your Bible, keep your Quran, keep whatever it is.
Keep it for you.
Yeah, even though, like, I would say that out loud to him, like, yeah, keep it. But in the back of my head, I know that you are your God. It's in your head, and it's really you that's keeping you from raping and killing. And
but
you know,
if they don't think that, if they need to that comfort, then they need to, because that person doesn't understand what you're saying. All they understand is there's a God watching me, so I have to do right. And if you introduce the concept that no one's watching, and it sinks deeply enough into their heads, who knows what they're capable of? And that person is not necessarily a good person, but they need something to keep them in check, and this is doing that.
The unknown is frightening to them.
Yep.
They have to fill the unknown with a void. That's all it is.
You said the unknown is frightening?
The unknown is frightening to them.
Yeah, it's like these things that I don't know about frighten me either, but I don't have to pray about them. Like, I don't know much about a pack of wolves, and I know they frighten me, but I'm not going to go studying.
I agree with Alphonse, because I did actually get into a conversation recently with a theist, and, you know, when I said, I don't know how life got started on this planet. I don't know how the universe came to be. He's like, well, you don't know. Well, God knows. And they don't care that the religion provides them with wrong answers as long as it provides answers.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I say this, though. I was asked, you know, since you don't believe in God, what are your morals? What stops you from going out and killing somebody?
What's
your
moral barometer? The name is in the...
Yeah. I'm like, how about the fact that that's some messed up shit to do? And, you know, I mean, I never, even when I believed in God, that wasn't the thing that made me rush out to help somebody. And then after I stopped believing in God and stuff like that, it's still, I mean, my character is who I am either way it goes. So I never needed any type of divine-inspired morality to say that there are good things I should be doing and there are bad things I should not be doing. Raping, killing, and pedophilia, those are things I shouldn't be doing. I don't need God to tell me I shouldn't be doing that. But if you do, like Em said, hey, more power to you. If that's the only thing stopping you from raping and molestation, hey, use that. Use it, okay? You know, knock yourself out.
Just look at AA. The rate of people who are able to quit drinking cold turkey without Alcoholics Anonymous is the exact same as the people who are able to quit with Alcoholics Anonymous. But they feed people this line that, oh, it's not an addiction, which it is, it's a disease. And you're too weak to make it on your own because obviously you got yourself into this, but if you cling to God, He can get you out of it. They move from one addiction to another, but believing in God isn't going to cause them to lose their job. Believing in God isn't going to make them so drunk that they hit their wife or they forget to pay their bills. So it doesn't really matter. That belief in God they believe in it so strongly that it's keeping them sober. It's a benefit to them.
I was gonna say I'll throw a slippery slope out there on that one, just for the fun of it, like that believing in God, it could cause them to go into that what do they call that, Christian Science, where they don't take their kids to the doctor and they just pray over them. Like, it could be a slippery slope to lead to that, to where they just die from something else because they put all their faith into that God now that got them off the booze.
Oh yeah, I mean, every alcoholic I know was in AA. I've heard of people who quit on their own, but every alcoholic I know was a member of AA. And who hasn't heard the former crackhead preaching on the street about God's goodness? Who hasn't?
Yeah.
You know, I was on crack, I was on meth, I was on heroin, and God saved me. It's like, where was God when you were shooting up and when you were smoking? Where was he then? Oh, well, I moved away from God, and he moved away from me, but I'm clinging to him now, and my life is back. And a lot of times, they can have normal functional lives. There are the rare occasions where they just become the street preachers, and they are truly addicted to preaching all day long. They don't have any lives or any jobs besides trying to save souls on the street. But most of the time, these people are able to get their lives back, get their jobs back, bring their families back together, because this addiction, I guess I wouldn't say that they were not under an influence, but, you know, their minds are relatively clear, and they're able to reclaim their lives.
That's the worst kind of person to encounter, because they run out of ammunition, so they kind of cling to emotionalism to try to, you know, convert you. And I just kind of tell them, like, that's an amazing story, congratulations, but it's just not enough to convince me. Like, I've been through different problems. And I've thought my way through them.
I think that takes a degree of honesty that a lot of people don't have with themselves.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people don't take responsibility for their addiction.
My mom was on a lot of drugs and alcohol when I was growing up. And I've related this quite a few times and stuff, and I have no problem admitting it before because it's true. But My mom was on a lot of that stuff, and so she was into these halfway houses and rehabs, and they almost always, without a doubt, were geared towards religion. And in some way, they would teach you how, you know, said, you know, it's a church-like thing. But almost every one of them was corrupt in some way. You know what I'm saying? Somebody was doing something, especially the director, who was mostly, more than likely, a former crackhead herself, you know. You find out about all this other stuff that's going on. My mom never really fully beat the drug addiction, as far as I know. And it, to me, it's like, if you can adhere to this crutch long enough and believe that this is what is keeping you from going down that path, I got to give you that. I got to respect that. But if that's not helping, then that's not the issue. Anyway, it's you.
You know, this brings to mind.
Yeah.
It sort of brings to mind something that I saw on YouTube a long time ago by this YouTuber named Catchphrase. He's actually a black atheist, and like the channel's not an atheist channel, but he did touch on it a few times. This one video, he talked about the five reasons that man believes in God, and he brought up the topic of religion existing to tell man that we are weaker than we actually are. And creating a relationship of codependency. The religion needs you to survive, and you are now in a mindset where you feel that you need the religion to survive. And you don't think you can do it on your own. You don't think you're strong enough. But there's a person
right.
that's stronger than you, who created the whole universe, who is strong enough. If you believe hard enough, he can help you.
Now, in relation back to the original topic, though, God, Satan, and stuff like that, I do know that there are some atheists who believe that they have, who've told me that they've seen ghosts and some type of apparition or something like that. Now, if you remove God and Satan, if you don't believe in those entities existing, where would these apparitions come from?
I don't think these concepts belong to religion.
Right.
I know a lot of religious people believe in those things, but like you can't just claim that. You can't believe in these things unless you subscribe to XYZ religion. We know that matter, you know, never disappears. Energy never disappears. You energy transfers from one form to another. The idea of ghosts, I'm skeptical of. But if I saw one, it couldn't be explained any other way. Why wouldn't I believe that? And I still wouldn't think that there was a God, you know, pulling the strings and making that happen. You can even, I mean, I know some atheists who believe in afterlives. You don't need to believe in a religion to believe that either.
Okay.
I got a question, and it's not to do with the topic, and I want y'all to think of me differently. But if I got eggs, right, and it says sale by September 11th, are they still good?
If you have what?
If you have some expired eggs.
No,
if I have eggs,
and they say sale by September 11th, are they good?
They're risky.
What's the year? What's the year?
Oh, no, this year, I mean, you said September 11th.
I think they might be good.
Oh, okay, because it just says sale by, don't say expired. All right, that's all I need to know.
Okay.
Yeah. You're running with the gamble groceries there. Yeah, that's tough.
I mean, if you must have eggs, you gotta do what you gotta do. You gotta take a risk and see if it works out for you.
Yeah, I think like with me with them.
I would suggest having something else to eat.
No, I gotta have my eggs and my egg white. So.
Okay, I hope that works out for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, with me and ghosts, I'm 100% like that doesn't exist at all. But I'm a silly little human being, so at 1 a.m, if I pass by the window at that right angle and see my own reflection while I'm half asleep, I'll have about a 1 second spook. Where I'm like, oh, what the hell is that? And I realize, oh, that's, you know, nonsense. You know, the wind rustling in the leaves and the trees and shadows and things. All little boogeymen we have in our heads. You gotta realize that stuff. There's no ghost. That's not real. But and I wanted to swing it back to the that morality thing before we got too far away from it. The where it's like, why wouldn't you kill somebody when you don't have a, you know, a religion or a god or some sort of punishment that's outside of man. You know, and it's like I've thought about that before. Like I, you know, like that's a pretty good question. I sat and gave it like, you know, just 30 minutes of my own thought, and it's like, I could give you a selfish reason, like, it's gross. Like, think about killing another human being. Like, for me, say with my bare hands and not from a distance with a gun, killing a person would be disgusting. Just punching somebody in the face is gross. You can cut your hand on their tooth and get whatever gross germs are in their mouth and your skin. Or if you stab somebody with a knife, you can smell the fresh blood from the wound. Like, killing somebody is disgusting, and I don't want to do it.
No, I mean, my reason, I've been asked this question, my reason was, I don't want to. Like, I've never thought of it, and I think it's ridiculous that you, a person would think that if you have no religion, then you have, like, murderous inclinations. I just don't want to. I've never felt the desire to kill another person. It's just that simple.
I have. You know. I'm not intentionally homicidal. Just somebody, you know, like, you know, I don't know. Just I really, really, really wanted a donut, and you ate the last one after you've already had five, and I had none. Yeah, I'm
it's not
thinking
that serious,
about
Mario.
Whoa, we're talking
serious,
donuts here,
man.
This is America,
yeah.
And it's donuts. Go on with the story. I respect donuts.
Bacon? And bacon? I mean,
yes.
I'm about to pull some pinhead shit and shoot some damn barbed wire.
Hold
on,
is Alfonso on the line?
I don't know.
Probably ate those eggs. No, he's not going to be on the line anymore.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
according to this thing, he's still on the line.
I'm still on the line. I just muted. I don't, you know. All that popping and stuff to
please,
be on the phone.
Please tell me how you feel about wanting to kill over some donuts and bacon.
It depends
on the situation. If it's the last ones on Earth, I guess. I'm not sure.
Earth, even in the North American
continent. I guess. I don't know.
See, that's what I'm talking about.
But those are those thoughts. Like, I could see how that's an extreme one off a basic situation. But, like there are those thoughts. Like I'm not going to go running around trying to beat up all the other men because women are out there. But, like, if a lady came to me and was like, ah, that guy's bothering me, you want to beat him up, I would actually consider it for a second. You know, just that stupid mammal instinct to challenge the other man. But I'm not going to go run around doing that. And I don't know why, but I know that there's no Jesus in there telling me not to.
I think religion really plays with people's heads. Like, it gives them this idea that everyone is like intrinsically evil. I'm of the mindset that everyone has a propensity for good or evil, and what we do is based on our experiences and how we choose that those experiences shape us, and how far we're pushed from psychologically and physically. These people, a lot of these people that I've spoken to, it's mostly fundamentalists that have this idea that people are evil. We're completely evil, and God is completely good, and only He can redeem us. So, of course, they're going to think that, you know, the evil is just going to come spilling out of us once we reject God. It's like, no.
I really find humor in that whole concept, the entire concept of redemption and forgiveness. It's like, I am the light in darkness, so I created not only light, but only the darkness, and the person who is the chief organizer of darkness that allowed to live and create his own domicile on the place that I created. Now, he comes down to my place. I blame him for everything that goes down and everything. And so after floods and firebombs and stuff, don't stop people from acting up. You know, never mind the fact that I apologize for wiping out all the people I created by posting a rainbow in the sky, you know, to say my bad. But, okay, that's cool, all right? Finally, it's like, all right, I really need to make up for what happened here. Let me impregnate this human and let her give birth to my child, and 30 years from now, he's going to say a bunch of shit, roll around with a couple dudes, cast out demons. He has the power to heal the sick and all kinds of stuff. He knows he's the son of God. They know he's the son of God. He gets himself killed anyway. And that's for the idea that the only way that you, as the creator of the rules of the place you created, can redeem the people you created is to sacrifice a half a mortal being that you created solely for that purpose, who didn't die anyway, is the dumbest idea I've ever heard of. And the guy didn't stay dead. So if he died and stayed dead, it would make a little bit more sense. But it's almost like you got a refund, man. I mean, you bought the toaster and then used it and took it back to the store. Because if the man died and then came back, that means he isn't dead.
I think the third Jesus sacrifice is really, like, out there. Like, not only is it the obvious, oh, he's God, the Father, so basically he's sacrificing himself. There's a more subtle thing that no one ever really talks about, which is that Jesus, who with the Hebrew temple, Jesus was wanted by the law. It wasn't, you know, he saw a bunch of people ready to be crucified, and he told the Romans, I'm going to die in their place. Or he told the Romans, please, nail me to this cross so I can be sacrificed for humanity. He was a wanted felon. He got the death penalty.
Ah, see, I didn't know that. I just learned something there. I didn't know that he was breaking the law there.
Judas got money for turning him in. There was a reward out for this dude. Like, if the law wants you, how is that a sacrifice? If you're already a wanted criminal in that area, how is that a sacrifice? And then they make the story even more convoluted, and then his divinity is put into question because instead of, quote-unquote, healing the people in his hometown, he bypasses it, saying that prophets are never recognized in their own home. But you're not a prophet. Saying that Jesus is a prophet implies that he's just a man. You said you're God. Why can't you heal lepers back in Bethlehem? As far as those people knew, he was just Joseph's crazy son. He wasn't God.
Because science wasn't out back then.
Hmm?
I said, because science wasn't out back then. I'm being sarcastic. Like,
oh, they had what they thought was science.
Nah. I looked it up. I'm good. 5 weeks after that date, so I'm good. Yeah.
Well, yeah, if you're going to take a wanted man and say that, oh, he's the redeemer of the world, this is a sacrifice, like, let's be real. whether or not anyone can agree on Jesus being God, if he did in fact live, he was going to get crucified anyway because he was wanted by the law. Period.
I want to use that. I want to argue with somebody just so I can use that because I learned it now. Yeah, so
well,
he was a goddamn criminal.
I got one too. Like they said, it's the ultimate sacrifice, laying down your life for another being. But you got to look at the aspect of it. Like you got to consider who you're talking to. If you're talking to someone that thinks Christ is God in one, then this same person or whatever created a human being and is a spirit. So what is a human being, a human body to a spirit? So what was the actual sacrifice? Like
especially
you died,
since he came back in 3 days.
If you would have died, like if you would have died and stayed dead, then that would have been a sacrifice. But he died, he resurrected, and now is like reigns supreme over the universe. If anything, that's a promotion.
And he knew beforehand that he would be resurrected. It's not like, oh, surprise, Jesus. God's going to reward you for your sacrifice by resurrecting you. Like, he knew that he was going to be resurrected. Like, I would gladly die for my friends if I knew I was going to come back in 3 days. Hell, 3 weeks. If your life was on the line and I'm guaranteed that I'm going to come back in that time, sure, I would do it without question.
Yep.
But see, let's go back to something. You know what I'm saying? Satan. What does Satan really do? Because if let's assume that it was Satan who influenced Eve, the woman, to eat from the tree of life. Now, you know, first of all, why did she put it in the garden first? We ain't gonna talk about that. Anyway, look, let's assume that it was Satan, and he introduced evil. You know what I'm saying? Let's put it all on the human. All right, what's to stop you from saying, hey, you screwed up what I did here? Let's start this whole thing over. Okay, well, let's not start over there. Maybe sometime along the way, you had a chance to rewrite the rules. This is your planning. You created the rules that it goes by. So if one element is allowed to screw that up, you have any chance to create that because you created the element that is screwing it up in the first place. And so,
I have a better question.
If Satan has the power to manipulate and influence God's creation and what he does, then is God powerful or is he just allowing it to happen?
Well, my question was always two things. First of all, how can God's perfect creation even be able to be manipulated by evil? And the second question is, why would Satan or, you know, the evil serpent, evil of any form, even allowed to enter into the garden?
Well, you know, if you read the scripture, it didn't even sound like God knew he was in the garden.
Yeah, I mean, it was in the garden. It was near the tree of knowledge of good and evil, which is ironic, too, that they're getting punished for something that prior to eating the fruit, they had no knowledge of good or evil.
That's what I'm saying, but, you know, when he... But the scripture, I remember the scripture saying that God walked into the garden, and Adam and Eve were hidden, and they were, you know, saying they jumped out and they put some clothes on or something like that. Already put clothes on. He's like, and he's asking them why they're wearing clothes and stuff like that. The way that I'm interpreting that scripture is he didn't even know about the snake until he saw it.
Well, he asked before he even got to them, where are you? Why do you need to ask me that question?
Right.
You're omnipresent. You know where I am. Why have you covered yourself? Why are you asking that question? You know why I covered myself. You know what I just did.
I mean, just over the past 5 minutes of the stuff that's been broken down here and, like, the way you, like, the details that have been dug into, I wish that more of these people could just admit that it's bad writing, that the guys who wrote this were horrible journalists or novelists or whatever they were trying to be. They wrote in that God walked and he can't see him, but he knows everything. And it's like, really, these were just some shitty writers, man, and a bad first draft that got printed. It's a horrible book.
It wasn't just the first draft. It's been printed for a long time. But yeah, I asked myself these questions, like, why was evil even allowed to be in the garden? Everyone knows when you have something good, you got to keep it in good condition. Like, I'm gonna be a nerd right now and use a comic book analogy. If I have, a rare edition Spider-Man in mint condition, it's going to stay in that plastic baggie because I know being exposed to water, moisture, even the air over time, it's not going to look that good anymore. If I have like a G.I. Joe action figure, it's going to stay in that case. Why would you expose something good to something evil? Why would you allow evil to permeate where these perfect beings were living?
Yeah, see, and there is zero good answer for that. I mean, unless we get some apologist on here that's going to say something very amusing. There is no good answer for that. And those are the questions that they hate for us to ask. When you ask that question, that's called an attack.
The conversation's usually over when you get some line like, well, you just have to have faith. That's when the conversation's over.
Yeah, that's the towel.
Or I'll pray for you. That's something completely different.
it's so hard not to be snarky when I hear that.
Prayed, thanks for nothing. Well, we'll see. Like, kind of like using hell as a threat. And I'm like, you're supposed to make me believe in the good of your religion. You're using hell as a threat. Like, really? But yeah, we'll see. We'll see who's right in the end. I'll pray for you.
And then that makes me want to keep going because it's like, well, really, you won't see because from the, you know, when you ask the religious leaders the question, you're not going to remember me in heaven because, like how they say, what if I go to heaven and my father goes to hell? Oh, heaven will be so awesome you'll forget he ever existed. So really, you won't see.
From my experience, I don't get that anymore. Like I said, I don't debate the Bible anymore. So like, they don't say they'll pray for me. They don't threaten me with hell because like how I calmly talk to them, I'll answer their questions. Like it culturally, historically, does not work for me. Like it can't tell me who I am or where I come from, and they never really can debate that. They're like, well, the scripture says here. I'm like, okay, but you're just saying a claim. That's not evidence at all.
Yeah, I mean, I'm at that point, too, where debating is no longer in the cards for me. Like, the worst part about being an atheist, really, when you're talking about in terms of life and death, is the fact that I won't be able to say, I told you so, when I'm dead. Like, really.
Nope.
Because even if there is an afterlife, the god of monotheism is, it's like, as an entity, logically, cannot exist. If anyone makes it to some great afterlife, that's not what's going to be waiting for us there.
You know, I used to say this when I was picking, when I was getting into debates, and like y'all, I really have stopped getting into debates quite often. Normally, I'm tagged into them because when I get going, I get, you know, when the engine gets going, I'm going. But if I can avoid them, I will. So, one of the things that you say is, you know, if there is a hell, it's going to be really funny seeing who is sitting beside me on that bus ride down there, so convinced that they were going to heaven and I was the one going to hell. I mean, that's almost worth the trip.
Yeah.
I think we live in a culture now, too, where, especially in America, people just keep talking about how great God is and how great Jesus is because it's popular. Like, these people, most people are talking about their apps. They're putting, like, I love Jesus quotes while they're at the bar, at the club.
Yeah, it's just the thing to say. It's a fad that's been going on way too long. And
gangster rappers talking about shooting people, you know, making all these babies. You have people like Nicki Minaj talking about, I'm not lucky, I'm blessed, I believe in Jesus. Like, really, Nicki? Like, you see this stuff, and it's just a blatant hypocrisy. It's just too much to bear. I don't see that much, that such overt hypocrisy, sadly enough, outside of black culture. In the U.S., it's like, you know, religion is fused into everything. So no matter what kind of life you're living and what kind of philosophy you subscribe to, if you just throw Jesus on the end of it, it's good. You're fine.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I remember, like, towards the late 90s, like, because I love hardcore hip-hop about shooting 50 people in the face. I could listen to it all day. But, like, towards the late 90s, Like, so many artists would have that one generic Jesus song on their record, like, for no reason. It's like, what happened? What was that? Right around 98. And it's like, how are you guys doing that? You trying to make your grandmother happy with one record?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, I mean, 50 Cent just put out a manual, an anti-masturbation manual. Mace found God. DMX found God. Every failed rapper has found God.
Yeah. It's the next thing. You know, if you can't make, there's an audience somewhere, and especially if you already got followers and everything, and you follow religion, you almost always have a built-in following right there. You just release all your shit with them. It may not crack the Billboard top 100, but you still make money. And
you know what it is, too? Like, I was thinking, like, oh, they're just doing it for the attention, but really, if you think about it, a lot of these people, their fan base are, like, women in their early 30s and up, and a lot of these fans are, like, still groupies. They're just waiting for these guys to find another record. And a lot of these women, you know, they kind of left that club life behind. They've got families now. They're not at the club every night. They can't believe shake anymore. They've been saved. How great is it now that their favorite rapper is saved, too?
Yeah, that's smart. Yeah, that's just a way to sell it, which shows you that it's just a job. It's a way to, you know, how many of, you know, I doubt that they're applying for a 501c3, but it's a job, and it's the type of thing that I've thought about before. I've brought up the idea on this show, like, keep on pushing your name forward, doing these podcasts, open up a blog as an outspoken atheist, and then write a book about how you got converted to Jesus, sell 1 million copies to Christians, and then do interviews about how it was a funny joke and you made a bunch of money off of them.
Terrible. Mace is fixing to be the next Creflo Dollar. He's got a whole, like, mega church outfit going on over there. Mason?
Yeah.
Mason
Diddy. Yeah, that dude that raps so slow, it sounds like he's about to fall asleep while he's talking or something.
Yes.
Lame.
At least he rapped, though. Didn't Diddy just talk next to him? But, yeah, so he found God, and he's got this whole mega church outfit. DMX wants to be a reverend now or a deacon. He found God, you know, after years and years of being a rough rider. MC Hammer was a reverend, went to rap, then went back to church. So, I mean, the last person I thought would tell people not to masturbate would be someone like 50 Cent, who was in jail on drug charges. You're telling me that masturbation is wrong?
Maybe he's just still in his 40s. Oh, what'd you say?
Hold on, I didn't hear anyone.
Yeah, has anyone ever done the whole thing about spinning the record backwards and whatnot?
I haven't done that.
We used to do that with Bone Thugs Records because we were kids in the suburbs that had nothing else to do. Like, we'd literally, like, take the radio out to a... We were the kind of kids go out to a cemetery on Halloween night and play Bone Thugs Records and play with a Ouija board. And which is further proof, none of that stuff is real. Nothing ever popped out. Ooh, boogie boogie. You know, none of that stuff ever happened. Oh, yeah, we used to love to play Bone Thugs and Harmony backwards and try to front like we hear something crazy. We didn't, but it was fun.
I, for one, am going to raise my hand right now and say that every time I play with the Ouija board, I cheated. And I made my friends think that something was moving. I love the looks on their faces. Yeah, I was that kid. I cheated. I probably admit it. Like, I would tell them after the fact, like, you know, a couple of days later, like, you know that didn't happen, right? That was me pushing the Ouija board. And I have, like, really long fingers, so I could get away with, like, twitching my finger a little bit and no one would notice. And I would make it look.
Were you cheating or were you just an early social scientist and you didn't know it yet? You were really just testing your test subjects.
No, I wasn't testing because I knew exactly how they would react, and I was trying to entertain myself with the reaction.
You know what? I think that's a fair deal. Like, I would have laughed with you.
Yeah, so I cheated the Ouija board. I think everybody cheats at the Ouija board. There's always that one person that's pushing the board. And all it is a matter of being able to move subtly enough so that other people don't see, or capitalizing on their superstition so that they don't notice you're moving the board.
And then things start moving
keep
by
a straight
itself
face.
Is a different story.
Yeah, I mean, the Ouija board was basically
a different story.
Yeah. Like, I would throw all kinds of weird things on the Ouija board. Garfield, like, you know, Benedict Arnold, like... Yeah, like, it was funny. It was always funny. Like, I saw Kunta Kinte one time. That was funny. It was from Black History Month.
See, I couldn't have pulled that prank. I would have misspelled it and messed it up.
Yeah. You can always try with something
call.
Kizzy, like Kizzy.
We finally got another call, so we got like 10 minutes left. So let's bring in 312 and see what they got to say in the last in the final stretch. All right, 312, talk to me.
Hi, this is Orlandra, and I know Emmaline. I'm so sorry for calling in late. I got the times wrong.
I'm so glad you finally called. I was looking forward to your call.
I'm so sorry. I mixed up the times with Eastern Standard and Central Standard. I'm so spastic like that. I'm so sorry, y'all, but I really have enjoyed what y'all been saying, and I feel the exact same way. Satan is not real, and anybody that believes that is clinically insane.
Okay, you know, you can listen to the archives after the show is over and whatnot.
Yeah, if you miss anything, you can go back and listen. I'm so glad they finally did get a chance to call, though. And, you know, the thing about Satan being clinically insane, though, I didn't think that when I first deconverted and I first became an atheist. I didn't think that belief in Satan was insane. But the more I thought about it, belief in God was insane. And if Satan was a byproduct, then that made him insane, like, you know, by association.
Exactly. I just feel like, man, if it's easy for them to believe in something that's so freaking imaginary, I mean, they're going to believe in anything. And, I mean, in a minute, they're going to make us wear freaking foil hats, you know? So I just think it's so stupid. And they waste so much money, and they can be giving it to people that really need it, like the poor and the veterans, you know? But they give it to their church.
Yeah, the veterans,
but isn't that
I need
the point?
That.
Yes, the veterans definitely need it. But isn't that the whole point, to get you to believe in anything? I mean, Mormons are out here wearing magical underwear. Magical underwear. Just the phrase, like, you can't say that with a straight face. But the point is to make you believe in anything.
And because it's impolite to talk about it. Like, you can never bring...
There's a quote that I read that says that religion is seen by the common people, by the powerful... By the rulers as useful, by the intelligent as false, and by the fool as true, or something along those lines. But
yeah,
I think there are many rulers. There are many rulers that do use religion. I don't believe that most of these politicians that claim to be so Christian are religious at all. But they know pulling that Jesus card, just like every rapper knows pulling the Jesus card, is going to bring fans running.
Yeah, that's why
exactly.
They forced it in the platform.
Yeah, they use it for profit. And that's so not what it's supposed to be about, because I was raised, indoctrinated as a Jehovah's Witness. And let me just say, I missed out on a lot of stuff in my life. They are a freaking cult. Like, that's what it is. And it's scary.
My grandmother's Jehovah's Witness, and I studied with them. I never actually became one myself. So, yeah, I have some you know, some dealings with them. And, you know, they are not sect, I'll tell you that.
First time I met a Jehovah's Witness was my sixth grade teacher, actually. And I knew that Jehovah's Witnesses exist, but I didn't know anyone who was. And, you know, she actually spoke to me about a few things because I was interested. And then she told me something about how they don't encourage people to go to higher learning institutions. And, of course, I was 12. I had to ask her, like, how did you become a teacher? Didn't you go to college? And she's like, yeah, well, I became a Jehovah's Witness after, you know, I went to university. And, you know, things like not celebrating birthdays, I think that's a little bit unnecessary. it just rubbed me the wrong way. But, you know, as I got older, I was hearing more and more of Jehovah's Witness horror stories, like things that weren't just weird, but, like, flat out wrong.
Yeah, it's insane. They celebrate Passover, and that's like the Jewish holiday. Like, that's so contradictory. It's crazy to me.
Catholics celebrate Seder meal. Like, Catholics celebrate the Seder, and not the Jewish holiday. right? Wow. A lot of different denominations will pull, you know, a Jewish holiday out of their ass and, you know, cling to their Jesus roots, and then the other 364 days of the year, they'll forget that Jesus was a Jew and they shouldn't be eating barbecue.
Yeah, it's laughable at best. I'm sorry, it is.
All right, we got another caller on the line. Who wants to say something in the final leg of the show?
I'm so glad they were able to call the Orlando. And Alfonso, it was great talking to you as well.
All right.
Thank you, guys.
All right, right on.
Have a good
Thank
night.
You.
You too, guys.
Take care.
Night.
All right.
773. It's almost 11 Eastern Time, which means we've been
Hello?
Talking for 2 hours.
Yep.
Hello?
What's up, man?
Who's speaking?
Okay.
Oh, this is Christian. Christian Hoffel.
Hi, Christian.
Oh, what's
How
up?
You doing?
Did you and Orlando call at the same time?
Yeah, she's sitting right next to me.
Did you enjoy the show?
Yeah, I didn't get to hear all of it because, like she said, she reminded me really late. But, you know, well, you already know how I am. I'm an atheist. And, you know, I really am very opinionated. You know,
yeah,
I've
seen some of your comments and facts versus faith, and I was actually really impressed that someone actually take that time, because you know me, I'm kind of giving up trying to talk to religious people, and you always make such an effort to get your point across.
That's because sometimes I feel like, you know, if you can really get them to question themselves, then they can at least be on a path to breaking free of that psychosis. You know, as long as you can get them to question themselves. And sometimes I'm in class and I'm bored and I need some people to laugh at.
Oh.
So,
well.
You know.
So I agree with what you're saying about getting people to question things. There are people, you know, you think they're going to be... I thought I was going to be a Catholic for the rest of my life. Now, my questioning was internal. I never had anyone challenge me on it, even though my best friend is an atheist. We just, you know, we never talked about religion. So I never had anyone question me or challenge me. But, you know, I know many atheists that, you know, someone asked a question or made a statement that kind of planted that seed of doubt, which I call the seed of common sense. And, you know, they started to question things more.
Well, for me, it was more like I had already, like, always questioned everything. And, you know, religion, it never really seemed right to me. You know, sometimes, like, you know, everyone has personal experiences, you know, that they attribute to whichever God they believe in. And, of course, you know, as a religious person, I would attribute good things to the God that I believe in. And I just really questioned all that, you know. It was like, you know, I did all that, you know, and these things can, only way it could have been different is if I made a different decision, you know. It wasn't due to anything else. And, you know, as a kid, we always, you know, we were very critical of everything, and my grandma, she always kept us learning about science and math, and so did my mom. Even though my grandma was very religious, that was kind of like a separate thing. But when I just actually investigated it, you know, further than just reading the Bible, and I uncovered so many things, it's like, why would I believe in something like that? You know, and that's really what it comes down to, you know.
Awesome. Well, you know, we're in the last minute or so. We're going to go ahead and wrap the show up and everything. I appreciate you calling in, all the comments. Will, why don't you let them know about you right quick?
Oh, yeah. All I can say is I'm dead-ass embarrassed. I fell asleep at my desk sober and called in late. I didn't even have the fact that I had a drink to have an excuse.
Were you sober? Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Fell asleep
yeah.
at my desk sober.
Cool.
That's terrible.
Cool.
It was really great talking to you guys. I had fun.
You too.
And call
All right.
Thank you so much. You guys are amazing.
All right.
Let us know when the next show will be.
That'd be 2 weeks from tonight.
Cool.
Yeah,
all
but
right,
I think
we'll
read the Science of Skepticism tomorrow.
Cool. All right.
That sounds cool.
So we had another great show. It was a great time talking with Will and him and all the callers who called in, all the activity in the chat room. I'm Mario Dorsey. I guess I use my real name. One part of Black Nonbelievers. You can find us at blacknonbelievers.org or on Facebook. Be sure to check out Kim, you know what I'm saying, and her show, which is going to air on Sunday afternoon. 1 p.m. East, I believe, and everything, and really enjoy the shows that she brings out and the knowledge that she kicks out and everything like that. Remember, we're not here to thank for you or convert you, you know? So, with all that said and done, have a nice weekend. Y'all be safe and enjoy.
Good night, everyone.
All right,
bye.
I'm going to make that drink now. All right.
Bye.
I met him 15 years ago. I was told there was nothing left. No reason, no conscience, no understanding, and even the most rudimentary sense of life or death, of good or evil, right or wrong. I met this 6-year-old child with this blank, pale, emotionless face and the blackest eyes, the devil's eyes. I spent 8 years trying to reach him, and then another 7 trying to keep him locked up, because I realized that what was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil.